From Gettysburg to Johnstown, Bedford to Lafayette Hill, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, state budget hearings are now underway. State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill will be among those asking the questions during the hearings. She is here to talk about Senate Republican priorities. Property tax reassessments are politically unpopular, but as Westmoreland County has learned, they are needed to stabilize county finances. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And Pennsylvania has a lack of affordable housing, and in many municipalities, restrictive zoning regulations are to blame. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania talks about it on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The state's independent fiscal office is not as confident that the Commonwealth can afford Governor Josh Shapiro's over $48 billion budget as he is. The independent fiscal office is projecting a $4.2 billion budget deficit in the 2024-25 fiscal year, which begins on July 1st. And that projected deficit will grow to $4.5 billion by 2028-29. A spokesman for the IFO said the governor's projections are plausible, but it should be noted his numbers rely on two revenue streams that currently do not exist. In his budget address earlier this month, Governor Shapiro proposed a wide range of spending increases, but Senate President pro tempore Kim Ward said it was filled with, quote, unicorns and rainbows, and essentially called it dead on arrival in the upper chamber, which is controlled by Republicans. The ongoing battle over the legal requirement that proper dates must be written on mail-in ballots is back in court. The Third U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals heard oral arguments this past week on an appeal of a district judge's ruling that even without the proper date, such ballots must be counted. This despite the fact the law governing the use of mail-in ballots requires accurate dating. Stay tuned. It was a day of reckoning for Michael Neal, an ally of Philadelphia labor union leader John Johnny Doc Dougherty, who have been convicted of raiding the labor union's treasury to cover personal expenses. A judge sentenced Neal to 13 months in prison for his role in embezzling $600,000 from the union's treasury. Johnny Doc awaits sentencing. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. State senators and representatives have begun the very detailed process of holding budget hearings with the secretaries of the various cabinet departments. Governor Josh Shapiro's big spending budget proposals are on the line. Here to talk about it is State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill. She represents the 28th State Senate District in southern York County. Senator, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Kristen, the state budget process now moves to legislative hearings, of which you as a state senator will be participating in many. Your president pro tem in the state Senate, Kim Ward, has referred to the governor's budget, Governor Shapiro's budget, as filled with rainbows and unicorns. So how in these hearings do you start addressing all the many, many, many spending proposals the governor has put forth?
It's going to be a great challenge, but this week we started that process of hearing from cabinet secretaries and the administration on what I said was going to be a huge challenge. I didn't take it quite as far as the president pro tempore and with regard to unicorns and rainbows, but you know, when the governor gave his budget address, we heard him express this need to spend a lot of our hard-earned tax dollars. That's going to grow our state spending by more than 7%. That is double the rate of inflation. Conversely, what we did not hear from that governor was a concrete strategy to pay for the spending spree that he wants to take our state on during this next year. And so this is really what we are looking for in this 3-week long process, getting a better idea of how exactly he's going to pay for it. Because my concern has been, since the day of that budget address, that this budget proposal would work great in Washington, D.C., where politicians can just print more money to pay for their endless spending. Here in Pennsylvania, our taxpayers will be forced to pay more in taxes to cover the governor's extravagant spending that has been put forward in this budget.
Taking a look at how he's planning to pay for this, Kristen, he has suggested that there's a lot of money in the state's rainy day fund, and the governor and the Democrats in the legislature have been eyeing that up like a hungry dog that sees a ham sandwich on the kitchen counter. They seem to want to keep spending the rainy day fund. Is that really a good idea? Do you think there's too much money in that fund, or is it really a prudent backstop?
My opinion is it is a prudent backstop. When you look at where we have seen revenue growth in this Commonwealth, it's come from two places. First, it's come from the interest on our budget reserves and our rainy day fund. Second, it's come from the inheritance tax. So interest on one-time dollars and people passing away who are wealthy. That's not a good revenue stream to base massive increases in state spending. Additionally, when you look at his budget, he's showing this balanced budget through the next 5 years. Again, that projection is based on eliminating all of our budgetary reserves, including the rainy day fund and the current general fund balance. Additionally, having numerous revenue and expenditure projections that are highly unlikely to occur. I think back to when I was in grad school taking quantitative research methods and my professor saying the numbers are your friends, they'll tell you what you want them to say. He has made very rosy budget predictions with regard to revenue. And then, additionally, he is predicating this growth in spending on two revenue streams that don't exist. The first is the legalization of recreational marijuana, and the second is taxing skill games in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. What I will tell you is that at some point, we will run out of sinners to balance our budget. And two, sin taxes never produce the amount of revenue that they are projected to produce. So this is really, really, really concerning.
We are talking with State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill of York County. We're talking about the Pennsylvania state budget and the proposals by Governor Shapiro. There's also a number of spending increases in this budget that are highly questionable. Most of them are highly questionable. But one, Kristen, he's proposing to spend $1 billion more dollars on public education, this on top of all the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that got added to public education during the Wolf administration. Is it really necessary at this point to start throwing that much more money into the public education system?
Loman, I'm sure you probably know. I was the co-chair of the Basic Education Funding Commission, and I voted against the majority report for that very reason. It's not just money. It has to do with accountability, greater reforms, and parental empowerment. Those things are really, really important. And we have heard from both former Governor Tom Wolf and current Governor Josh Shapiro about the historic investment in public education, record amounts of money going into education. And that's not my words, that's their words. And what we continue to see is students struggling to succeed. Now, when you look at what he has projected from 25 and 26 budget year through the 28-29 budget year, he fails to include the more than $1 billion in annual education funding increases that his own administration advocated for in the Funding Commission's majority report. And I think that is a clear indication that we cannot afford the Democrats' more than $7 billion basic education funding plan under our current projected revenues.
One of the key policy goals of the Republican caucus in the state Senate has been to try and help students in the state's most underperforming school districts to give them some educational options. What does the governor's proposed budget do financially to help or hurt those students?
Well, I think what we see is a reduction in those types of programs that currently exist in our state budget. And additionally, he spoke to the idea of past scholarships and basically said it's up to the General Assembly to figure out. I have to tell you, we need to help children in failing schools. We need to help lift them up. Every child deserves to have a platform for their future success. Even after these historic investments, we still have public schools in Philadelphia that the senator from Philadelphia spoke about on the Senate floor as saying that they have 0% proficiency in math and 0% proficiency in reading. Oh my goodness, that is a disgrace. And so those students who don't have the means to get themselves out of there, those students who have no other opportunity, giving them that chance with a past scholarship is something I think our caucus continues to champion.
Another area that we have on this program talked about at length over many, many years now is the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which in many ways is actually a new tax upon the citizens of Pennsylvania. Want to bring us up to date on where that issue stands?
Let me be clear. The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative is why our energy costs are soaring. It is a massive tax. Now, we took the governor to court saying that the governor can't unilaterally impose a tax on the people of Pennsylvania without the General Assembly acting. And the courts agreed. They said, you are correct. The governor is appealing that case, and we are waiting to see what that will produce. But I can tell you that our caucus stands firm in opposition to the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative and to the hardworking people of Pennsylvania. You know, I always say, Loman, that it doesn't matter what kind of tax it is or at what level of government that tax is. All of that money is coming from the same place, out of the wallet of that hardworking Pennsylvanian. And Pennsylvania just can't afford the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative.
State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill. She represents the 28th State Senatorial District, that, of course, in York County, Pennsylvania. And Kristen, if we have listeners who would like to learn more about the state budget, more about the other issues we've discussed, where can they find you on the web?
My website is senatorkristen.com, and that's KRISTIN. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Twitter.
Very easy to find. Senator Kristen Phillips Hill. Kristen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Loman. It's a pleasure.
Property tax reassessments are accompanied by political pain, which is why county commissioners rarely undertake the process, but they are a necessary evil. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi explain why on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. This brief that you just wrote deals with Westmoreland County government and its finances. Frank, can you give our listeners an idea of what the Westmoreland County Commissioners did at the end of 2023?
Absolutely. They voted to raise the millages on property taxes for those who own property in Westmoreland County. They went from 21.49 mills to a state-imposed cap of 25. But that's not all. They also added an additional 3.48 mills to help retire county debt. That's a 32.5% increase that goes into effect in 2024. And needless to say, there's not a lot of people happy about that.
Frank, can you give our listeners an idea of what's happened with Westmoreland County's population and job growth and how that compares to these other counties?
Westmoreland County, which is part of the Pittsburgh Metropolitan Statistical Area, is what's called a county of the third class. Now, of course, the state has the counties divided up by population. Philadelphia is the only first-class county in the state. Its population is over 1.5 million. Allegheny County is the second-class county. And then you go second class A, that's Bucks, Delaware, Lancaster, Montgomery, the ring counties of Philadelphia. And then you get on to third class. And third class counties have population anywhere from 210,000 to 499,999. What I noticed was that there were five of them were home rule counties. And what it means to be a home rule county is the voters approved a charter, which acts sort of like a constitution for each county. And that takes a little bit of pressure off of the county from having to have the state govern them. And so that's Erie, Lackawanna, Lehigh, Luzerne, Northampton. So I eliminated them from the sample because they're just a little bit different. So that left me with the other six to look at. And what was nice is, of course, because they're non-home rule counties, all their annual financial reports are identical, so it may get in the data a whole lot easier to assemble and to compare. But one of the things I wanted to look at was how has population changed over the last 10 years. Now, all the financial reports give you the historical data from the last 10 years. And in this case, it goes from 2013 to 2022, because obviously that's the most recent year available. And what I notice is Westmoreland, which is the only county in this sample that's in the western part of the state, is also the only county that lost population over the last 10 years. And quite frankly, going even as far back as 2000, in the last 10 years, 2013, 2022, they lost almost 3% of their population. Whereas the others gained population anywhere from a low of 3.74% in York to 11.41% in Cumberland. Right then and there, you kind of realize that something happens to be not so right population with Westmoreland. So then I looked at the economy, specifically job growth, total non-farm jobs. Westmoreland is, in fact, in the Pittsburgh Metropolitan Statistical Area. It's one of our seven counties. So I look at the growth to total non-farm jobs during that 2013 to 2022 time frame. The Pittsburgh MSA grew by less than 1%. We're just not growing jobs on this side of the state. You look at the other five counties, while they're not in the Philadelphia metropolitan statistical area, they're close enough that some of the gravy falls off of the potatoes of Philadelphia and onto the other counties. That part, Philadelphia's MSA, their total non-farm jobs growth almost hit 10%, 9.88 from 2013 through 2022. So you can see there's in the state, there's more robust growth in the southeast part than in the west. And I think that's sort of part of the problem for Westmoreland is they're not growing economically as a result, the population's not doing well, whereas the other counties are.
Frank, can you give our listeners an idea of how does Westmoreland County compare on revenues, expenditures, mm-hmm. and debt with these other counties?
When you look at the revenue levels for the county, and we looked at total revenues per capita over the last 10 years, so the changes from 2013 to 2022, the highest change in per capita revenues belonged to York. They went up about 63.7%. Westmoreland was second at 46.4%. They went from $465 per person to $681 per person, followed closely by Berks at 43.8%. And then the others kind of rounded out Chester, Cumberland, and Dauphin. Again, it's the second lowest in revenues, but yet it had the second highest percentage change. We look at one of the larger aspects of revenues, and that's real estate, which is about a third of their revenues. And they had the lowest percentage change at almost 7%. Dauphin was about 7.7%, and the highest there was York at 65%. So they didn't have a lot of growth at real estate revenues, and I think that was part of the problem. Then we go to the total taxable assessed value, and they had the smallest growth there as well. They only went up 4.7%. York went up about 7.8%, Berks 6.4%, but the others are, you know, over 10%, between 10 and 15%. So you just didn't have the growth in taxable assessed value. You have as a result, growth in real estate revenues. And of course, it gets back to the fact that Westmoreland hasn't had a reassessment since 1972. The other counties, Berks did it in 94. They're the next longest. Chester, 98. Dauphin, 2002. York, 2006. And Cumberland, 2011. And we've always advocated for keeping assessments up to date, because if you're going to rely on property taxes, it has to be as fair and equitable as you can. On the expenditure side, they had the second highest growth, they being Westmoreland, second highest growth in per capita expenditures at 36.5%. York led the way 47%. But again, in terms of total amounts, in 2022, it's only $693, which is a little bit above Cumberland at $590, nowhere near what Berks did at $1,253. So you had a lot of growth, but not a lot in the way of numbers. I think where they really got out of hand was with public safety, which includes corrections. That percentage change over the 10-year period was over 50% expenditures. General government, they were 42% expenditures. And so you had a fairly decent sized jump in expenditures for a county that didn't have a lot of growth, heck, negative growth in population. And I think that was part of their problem and one of the reasons why the commissioners voted for such a large tax increase. But really where the big problem is with debt. And with debt over the 10-year range, they increased the general obligation bonds per capita by 82%. They were one of two counties that had increases the debt. Dauphin was the other one of 31%. Berks had a drop of 59%, Cumberland 53%, York 10%. So Chester was a slight drop, less than a percent, but they all lowered their obligation bonds, yet Westmoreland had such a large increase. And again, on a per capita basis, not terribly bad. It went from 298 to 544, but still a big jump for a county that's losing population and not growing in jobs and not having a whole lot of growth in other areas like taxable assessed property. So they were sort of up against it, needed to do something. It had to happen at some point in time. And I know someone said, well, it should have been small increases here and there to the millage rates. But they delayed because raising millage rates is not popular. And so they were up against it and they had to raise those rates as high as they did.
Frank, what type of policy actions would you recommend that the county government does take in the future?
First and foremost, they've got to bring the assessments up to speed. You know, since 1972, that's 52 years ago since they had last did a reassessment. Again, they had the lowest amount of total taxable assessed value in their county. We say that if you want fair and equitable collections and rates, you've got to make this reassessment at least every 3 years, somewhat regular. Pennsylvania is one of five states that does not require regular reassessments. That has to change. That needs to be done at the state level. But you know what doesn't preclude county commissioners or county executives from doing that on their own? If you're going to rely on property taxes, you've got to make them fair and equitable.
Frank, thank you very much for sharing this information with our listeners. As always, we invite you to go visit our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Restrictive land use and zoning regulations are contributing to the lack of affordable housing in Pennsylvania. So says Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
There are a lot of issues facing the nation and the Commonwealth, perhaps none more volatile than the housing market. Mortgage costs have reached a 40-year high, with most households now spending roughly 37% of their gross income on mortgage payments. Massive down payments to get already inflated interest rates to a sustainable level have left new homeowners with little to nothing left in their savings. Add to all of that, a housing inventory that is at its lowest point in decades, and Americans holding nearly $12.3 trillion in mortgage debt. We need reform, and we need it now. Government intervention is what got us into this situation, and traditional free market capitalism is our best way out, if for no other benefit than to release some of the pressure on a bubble that is about to explode. With businesses on Main Street in dire need of employees and potential employees in need of geographically suitable and affordable housing, local zoning laws need to be addressed here in the Commonwealth. Now, this is not to suggest that government-run housing needs to infiltrate every community. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Homeowners should have the right to expand their homes to bring in elderly family members or add mother-in-law suites to their properties without government interference. Buildings that once served as the industrial centers that provided the living for the surrounding communities now sit vacant and can easily be transformed into multi-unit residences to serve much of the same population if the government gets out of the way. It's simple. If there are changes to our zoning laws and natural development or reuse can occur, this will create a natural supply of homes. The basic laws of supply and demand are in play. And unfortunately, due to manipulation of that supply, actions like this are needed. As it stands, many of our communities prohibit the expansion of a residence or maintain a prohibition of smaller dwellings on a property. Further, most of our cities, mid-sized townships, and smaller boroughs put strict restrictions on what types of homes can be built in a community and often the type of use for said home. Inaction in the housing policy space is impacting real Pennsylvanians from every part of the Commonwealth. For example, meet Paul, an Allegheny County resident. Paul owns 5 acres of land and has a home that his family has outgrown. Naturally, he explored his options in the market and decided to add an addition to his home. Due to the stringent zoning laws in his borough, he fought the zoning board for 6 months over 1 square yard of his own land, of which the corner of his house would sit. Mind you, there are no other homes or properties for roughly an acre in either direction. Nearly $7,000 later in attorney fees, permitting fees, hearings, and surveys on top of previously submitted surveys, Paul was able to lay that stack of block on his own property. These kinds of restrictions happen every day to our neighbors. We can put a stop to this. A reality we must face is that there are not enough places to rent, and we do not have enough homes to attempt to purchase, which creates a barrier for Pennsylvanians looking to pursue their white picket fence American dream. Harrisburg can take swift action by getting out of the way and allowing the market to drive affordable housing solutions. Make sure your member of the legislature hears your message loud and clear. Help individuals and families find housing options at their price point by reforming land use regulations. You can scale your voice and act today by heading to AmericansForProsperity.org. Again, that is AmericansForProsperity.org. This is Emily Green, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. The 2024 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 4th through 6th at the Penn Harris Hotel and Convention Center near Harrisburg. This year's featured dinner speaker will be Judge Jeanine Pirro of Fox News The Five. She will be joined by a wide range of state and national speakers, including Pennsylvania State Treasurer Stacy Garrity and Heritage Foundation President Kevin Roberts. The 3-day event will also include an expanded schedule of workshops. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the nation's largest and longest running, this is our 35th year, of the state-based conservative activist conferences in the nation. Get complete details and register for this year's Pennsylvania Leadership Conference at paleadershipconference.org. That's paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.